This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 25th of March 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 24th of March 2022, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayn, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are thousands raised for Ukraine during village fundraiser, budget cut fears for the homeless, and city one of the top for housing refugees. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Right, thousands raised for Ukraine during village fundraiser. The village of Twyford came together over the weekend to raise thousands of pounds for Ukraine during a magical fundraiser organised by broadcaster and resident George Palmer. The event, held at the Bugle Inn on Sunday, March the 20th, saw just under £8,000 raised for the Disaster Emergency Committee Ukraine Fund, with 1,500 collected from the auction of promises alone. People attending were asked to dress in blue and yellow, and the villagers had decorated the marquee with daffodils in jam jars from gardens. Chef patron Lenny Carr Roberts provided Ukrainian food with all the produce donated free by his suppliers, and cakes were made by the locals. Winchester MP Steve Bryan was asked to join in and attended with his son William. He spoke briefly to thank everyone for their support before attendees tried their hand at singing the Ukrainian national anthem. Reflecting on the event, Mr. Bryan said, "The organiser, Georgie Solomon, produced a piece of magic in the late afternoon sunshine, and I'm sure we raised a good deal of cash for the appeal. I was really touched to be asked along to what was a village event, and really appreciated the chance to chat with so many people about what else they can do to help and important next steps with the Homes for Ukraine scheme, which so many have signed up for. Many wanted to know how they can pair up with a Ukrainian family needing sanctuary, so it was good to chat about that and connect people with the organisation Reset, which has set up a system that will ensure safe and appropriate matches between UK hosts and Ukrainian refugees."
Budget cuts fears for the homeless. Those who suffer from mental health issues and substance misuse could be at risk of returning to the streets if misguided budget cuts are put in place, a homelessness volunteer has cautioned. This comes off the back of a public consultation by Hampshire County Council on proposals to cut £680,000 slashed from its adult social care budget. The cuts aim to tackle the £80 million COVID-induced shortfall in the council's accounts by April 2023. Jeff Charnley, a retired Chief Environmental Health Officer from Chandler's Ford, has been one of more than 200 volunteers who helped Winchester Beacon for 7 years. He received the city's mayoral award for community service for his work, and is warning the cuts would not only endanger lives, but also lead to far greater sums of money needing to be invested further down the line. He said, "Regarding the £360,000 cuts that Hampshire County Council is proposing to make to homelessness support services, I am particularly concerned to learn that 73,000 £272 of the reduction in funds could be made in services in Winchester. As a supporter of the Winchester Beacon and their vital work, I disagree with the proposed cuts. I believe if the cuts went ahead, it would have a huge negative impact on the charity and the lives of the people it supports. Cuts could mean that the charity would have to scale back its services to make savings. This could mean a reduction in its personalised wraparound care, which not only changes but saves lives. This may result in more people leaving the service with untreated mental health issues and substance misuse problems, which puts them more at risk of returning to homelessness, and could also cost the council far more money to address these issues at a later date. As it stands, £320,000 of the funding at risk of being cut is provided to voluntary, community and social enterprise organisations across Hampshire, which support adults to continue to live independently in their communities like MHA. A further £340,000 goes towards supporting non-statutory services which help people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. I am concerned that the cuts come at a time when the National Housing Charity, Crisis, has predicted that by 2024 there will be 8,000 more people rough sleeping, he continued. The increase in the cost of living, benefit freezes and the end of COVID eviction bans are just some of the factors pushing people into homelessness. Beyond, the negative short and longer term consequences far exceed any perceived short term financial fix. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, County Council Executive Lead Member for Adult Services and Public Health, said, "Finding additional savings across adult social care is extremely challenging, and whilst significant work continues to transform services and find more efficient ways of doing things, we have additionally had to take the very difficult decision to review some services that we have no legal obligation to provide. This is not something we do easily or lightly, but should any or all of the proposals be taken forward, we would prioritise working with partner organisations to help minimise the impact of any changes."
City, one of top for housing refugees. Scores of Winchester residents have opened their homes to Ukrainian refugees since the launch of the government's sponsorship scheme. Phase one of the initiative opened on Friday for visa applications from Ukrainians wishing to travel to the UK and who have a named sponsor. So far, hundreds of thousands of people have expressed their interest in helping those fleeing the war. According to The Times, Winchester residents are leading the way alongside Cornwall, Leeds, Wiltshire and Dorset in pledging their properties to the Homes for Ukraine initiative. Debbie Caldwell, 55, who lives in Sparshot with her husband, is one of those who has registered. She's been in contact with Ilya, a Ukrainian father who's looking to send his two children, Sasha, 23, and Igor, 16, to safety, and is currently trying to help the pair apply for visas. Debbie says she has also set up a WhatsApp group for other interested villagers in hope of creating a small community of Ukrainians to help them settle. She said, "I had a bit of a time last week as I had COVID and I was watching the news and reading the papers and I just couldn't bear it. I felt so hopeless. But the problem with opening up just one house in a little village is that it's not great for the Ukrainians coming in. I spoke to a few friends and thought, I'm just going to email the whole village. The more we have in numbers, the easier it is for both sides. If we can get 10 houses with Ukrainians in, then they've got their own community and we can do dinners in the hall and hold social events to help them settle in, because it's just horrendous for them. So far, Debbie has had 7 other villagers offer their homes, while around 30 more have pledged to help with transport, clothing and additional support. However, she said the initial stages of the scheme have not come without difficulty, and issues with families safely finding a sponsor and then overcoming the language barrier to navigate the visa process has proved a stumbling block for many. To help alleviate early teething problems, Debbie has been in contact with a Russian-speaking fixer called Charlie Hutchinson and Tatiana Salvage, who runs a language school. Charlie, originally from Winchester, is trying to connect refugees with English host families from the Polish border with Ukraine. Debbie says she's hoping he will ease the process for other Winchester and Sparshall residents. Coincidentally, Charlie was taught Russian by Tatiana Salvage, 43, who runs LinguaFast, a language school in Mitchell, Dover. Born in Belarus to a Ukrainian father, Tatiana still has family in Chernihiv, the city in northern Ukraine, which has been heavily bombed. She also has Russian citizenship. She is offering free translation services to the kind Winchester and Basingstoke families who are looking to host refugees, and will run free English lesson for refugees. She said, "People who come here will probably feel incredibly stressed already, and most will only speak Ukrainian or Russian. So I thought if I form a sort of group, then they can meet each other and it may give them some kind of strength to move forward and settle here." Tatiana says she has been offered Northbrook Hall in Mitchell, Dover for the lessons and has been contacted by about 20 potential hosts in the last day alone. Reflecting on the support, City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "We heard that Winchester has some of the highest numbers in the UK of people volunteering to host Ukrainian families. The reaction to the unfolding Ukraine crisis from people in Winchester has been astonishing but not surprising. Last summer, local charities and community organisations in Winchester were overwhelmed with offers to help Afghan evacuees fleeing the Taliban. The Ukraine refugee crisis presents a new huge challenge, but the City Council and Winchester City of Sanctuary has been inundated with offers of support from individuals and local businesses." That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bailey, Claire Eldridge Bailey, on the 11th of March, aged 50. Bence Trower, Sheena Margaret Bence Trower, on the 9th of March. Bone, Robert Frank, known as Bob Bone, on the 13th of March. Brookshaw, the Reverend Janice Brookshaw, at home on the 2nd of March. Cook, Susan Cook, at Signature of Winchester, on the 5th of March, aged 103. Ede, John Sean Patrick Ede, at Winchester Hospital, on the 14th of March, aged 81. Morgan, John Morgan, on the 10th of March, aged 76. Rose, Colin Frederick Charles Rose, on the 28th of February, aged 86. Smith, Jean Smith, at home on the 5th of March, aged 89. Stribling, Kenneth William Stribling, on the 18th of March, aged 82. Tracy, John William Tracy, on the 6th of March, aged 87. And now we have Christian comment.
Christian comment, mothering in full. The stories of Ukrainian mothers forced to flee with their children have been heartrending. They have left behind homes and other family members to take the next generation to safety. Still more heartrending have been the stories of mothers risking their lives to return to Ukraine and be reunited with their children. Slowly emerging are the stories of the mothers, both Ukrainian and Russian, who have lost sons in the fighting. Mothering Sunday, which we celebrate this week, has rightly become an important day in our culture. At its best, it is a day to celebrate and to thank all who show a mother's love. That is often a birth mother, but it can be so many other inside and outside our family who offer care and love when a birth mother, for whatever reason, cannot. As a festival, Mothering Sunday dates back to the Middle Ages. The fourth Sunday in Lent was a day to celebrate by returning to one's mother church. This led to a form of pilgrimage. People travelled back to their childhood homes. Servants working away from home were allowed time off for this. They were often reunited with their mothers, hence today's cards and flowers. What is less well known is why that was done on this fourth Sunday. That is because this has been seen as Refreshment Sunday, a day of relief and relaxation from the spiritual rigours of Lent. Afterwards, on the days following, we have to regather our energies, looking ahead to Passiontide, Holy Week, and Easter. Refreshment, as the theme of this Sunday, was suggested by the first word of the traditional service, rejoice. The whole verse is from Isaiah 66. Rejoice with Jerusalem, and be glad for her, all you who love her. This passage depicts the healing of relationships in God's kingdom, the mutual joys and consolations of God and his people are like those in a mother's feeding of her child. In Isaiah, this image of healing comes only after a starkly realistic account of the wounds which need healing. In general, Christianity has avoided an untruthful and sentimental picture of motherhood. Instead, we acknowledge that mothering is costly. There are days, well, one day at least, mothers might think, for breakfast in bed, for cards and flowers. On other days, there is often suffering and wounding sorrow, the price the heart must pay for love. Christians see both of these in the story of Mary, the mother of Jesus. Mary knows joy as she bears and nurtures him. Later, she knows wounding sorrow as she stands at the foot of the cross. Soon, she also knows the healing brought by his cross, resurrection, and raising to God's right hand, and by the sending of the Holy Spirit. So this weekend, let us celebrate all who show a mother's love, both in joy and sorrow. And let us celebrate also the healing available to us in God's kingdom. God of compassion, whose Son Jesus, the child of Mary, on the cross, drew the whole human family to himself, strengthen us in our daily living, that in joy and in sorrow we may know the power of your presence to bind together and to heal. Through Jesus Christ, your Son, our Lord. Amen. And that is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is rector of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester.
Next, we have letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 5AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start off with the first letter.
And the first letter, in fact, I'll be reading the first two letters because they're connected. But this first letter is from Signe Biddle, Conservative candidate for the Worthies, and it's entitled Andover Road. Sir, I wish to complain about the headline County Council Conservatives Restate Support for Closure of Andover Road in Winchester, Chronicle Online, March the 1st. During the recent Hampshire County Council, HCC, meeting, when questioned about the Andover Road North plans, Councillor Oppenheimer, Executive Member for Highways Operations, did no more than restate the current position, also stated in the HCC and WCC Winchester Movement Strategy. To quote Councillor Oppenheimer in full, quote, "The County Council position remains as stated in the Statement of Common Ground. However, HCC and Winchester City Council are continuing to develop the Winchester Movement Strategy, and as part of a recent public engagement exercise, we have sought to gain views on the development of a new park and ride facility just off Andover Road. Consideration is still being given to how bus priority could be incorporated into the final road layout, and this includes potentially keeping Andover Road open for P&R buses, pedestrians and cyclists. This would require changes to the Harestock Road Andover Road junction, and we are working with both Carla Holmes and the City Council to look at options." Unquote. Nowhere did Councillor Oppenheimer say that HCC supports the closure of Andover Road. I'm pleased to update that I have shared our Andover Road North survey results, by the way 91% object to closure, with Councillor Oppenheimer, and he stated, quote, "I am aware of local concerns about the rerouting of traffic from Andover Road. I have spoken with local residents and understand why people have those concerns. HCC, as the Highways Authority, is not in a position to change the details of the master plan, which has been through a planning process. As Executive Member for Highway Operations, I will seek a meeting with the applicant Carla Holmes to establish a dialogue about the options and about their intentions." Unquote. As our Liberal Democrat councillors have done nothing to represent residents on this issue, I will continue to lobby Carla Holmes, WCC and HCC to push for a change to planning such that the trunk route of Andover Road North is kept open to all through traffic and Winchester Avenue open for all local traffic and buses. And that letter is from Signe Biddle, Conservative candidate for the Worthies, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy. This second letter from Sue Webb is also entitled Andover Road. Sir, people campaign, for years to have a bypass built to circumvent their villages or estates. Now it is proposed to divert a main artery through a housing estate with its inherent dangers, pollution and noise. Does that make sense? Of course it doesn't. If I lived in one of the houses on King's Barton, I would be setting up a petition now to have the main road removed before it made its unwelcome appearance and put back where it belongs, on the Roman Road straight into town. So writes Sue Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Phil Gagg writes about cleaner air. Sir, I was surprised to read in the Chronicle, March the 17th, that Councillor Kern thought an air quality surcharge would punish drivers. This felt like an escalation of language that could prevent us from having a sensible debate. So far, there has been strong cross-party support for the Air Quality Action Plan to reduce harmful emissions in Winchester City Centre. Recently, this has been backed up by Hampshire County Council's draft Local Transport Plan 4, LTP 4, which mentions air quality 65 times, emphasising the need for improvement. Of particular relevance is policy BTD3 that suggests emissions-based charging of the type proposed here. In LTP 4, the County Council recognises that the major source of air pollution is the private car. The case for discouraging polluting cars from entering the city centre is stark. At least 50,000 people die in this country every year from the effects of air pollution, which scales down to about 50 per year in the whole district and about 25 per year who live and work in Winchester or visit frequently. In any other context, an initiative that helps prevent 25 deaths a year would be unopposed. Anyone with a polluting car will still have the option of paying less at a car park on the edge of the centre and walking in for 5 minutes. By no stretch of the imagination can we call saving money and a bit of exercise a punishment. This is the added bonus that this change will leave more spaces near the shops for blue badge holders. Councillor Kern thinks that the surcharge will harm Winchester's economy. It's difficult to see why Councillor Kern believes this. All the research shows that cities with less traffic and clean air have better performing economies. This is obvious when you compare the footfall in St George's Street and the square. If a minor inconvenience for some can save lives, it will be well worth it. I hope there will be cross-party political consensus. And that letter was from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Traffic misery. Sir, how encouraging to hear that Winchester City Council is taking action to reduce the number of cars coming into the city centre. Chronicle, March the 17th. I despair at the queues up St George's Street at all times of the day. If I had my way, I'd close the whole road during the day, apart from vehicles making deliveries. It really is time people left their cars at home and walked or cycled into the city centre. Winchester is so full of SUVs blocking roads and spouting out emissions. It just makes walking into the city a total misery. As for the Conservative councillor, Michael Kern, claiming the council is punishing car drivers from coming into the city, what hogwash! A typically complacent attitude. Get on your bike or try walking. You might then appreciate your city without the scourge of the polluting car. And that is from Jeremy Pierce, Parchment Street, Winchester.
This next letter isn't quite as strongly put as that one, but it's from Mary Pearson and it's entitled Learn Lessons. Sir, I hope it is not too late for the City Council to reconsider Adam Architecture's excellent proposals for the redevelopment of Silver Hill, as featured in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, March the 17th. Painful past experience highlights the risk entailed in selling off this site to a single developer. The risk would be even greater this time around, as the council would not find retreat politically comfortable should unanticipated problems regarding the developer arise. Adam Architecture's proposed alternative is for the council to retain ownership and to work with a master architect. Local developers and architects, for whom the project would have some meaning, would also be involved, preferable to some faceless organisation for whom Silver Hill is just another financial opportunity. The illustrated street view proposed by Adam Architecture sensitively combines the old with its hint of a traditional market structure and the new. The scale and style blend with their surroundings. The plan also includes a bus station, which in spite of local concern was absent from the previous developer's plans as agreed by the council. Instead, passengers were to wait at roadside shelters with little or no proper seating. It is encouraging to note that in their plan, Adam Architecture have not overlooked residents using bus travel, many of whom have health, mobility and childcare requirements and who need a bus station. The easiest option for the council would be just to sell off the site. But whether this option would be best for Winchester itself is another matter. I believe that the retention of Silver Hill by the council would be much better. Adam Architecture's proposed partnership, working with its involvement of local expertise, would work incrementally as leases expire. This would allow for adjustments as required and be the organic way of working, involving residents and giving them a sense of ownership. In this way, instead of an eyesore, we will end up with something that does justice to our beautiful city. That letter is from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnall, Winchester.
Caroline Dennis writes about River Park sale. Sir, Winchester City Council has said that the sale of the River Park Leisure Centre site presents an exciting opportunity. Indeed it does, and since the land was covenanted to the people of Winchester for their leisure and recreation, it offers a chance to consult the citizens about their wishes and plan accordingly. An enlarged skate park, adventure playground, a cafe, Lido, for which there has been huge support. All of these would benefit Winchester residents. However, the views of residents were not only ignored, but definitely suppressed at the meeting on March the 9th. Acknowledging the feelings of the public should have led Winchester City Council providing a room large enough for everyone to attend, not a small room whose space was mostly taken up by a table forming a large empty square in the centre. 20 residents or so were allowed into the room. Roughly 50 more turned up and were barred from entering. Was it really necessary for Winchester City Council to call in two bouncers, soon to be followed by five policemen? They were called to control a group of mostly elderly, articulate and well-behaved local residents who insisted on their democratic right to attend, since the land in question belongs to them. Their request was simply that the meeting be moved to a larger venue or postponed to a later date. This hardly merited such a strong-arm approach. The Winchester City Council Cabinet agreed to the disposal of the site to the University of Southampton, an organisation based outside Winchester whose primary interest lies in its own students. Little or no indication has been given as to how the site will be used. There is nothing to prevent them from selling the site on at a later date to another developer. There was little consultation, it was not put out to tender. Councillor Todd confirmed his understanding that the covenant could be ignored and that sale proceed without any consultation because it was the sale of the land. Is this either legally or morally right or correct? So much for democracy and any expression of dissent in this city. That letter was from Caroline Dennis, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Bar End Depot. Sir, I attended the public exhibition on the City Council's plans for the disposal of the Bar End Depot site, Chronicle March the 10th. The first display board made it clear that the council needs to make the best use of council-owned land. Despite all the talent at its disposal, the council intend to appoint an agent to market the site for sale to developers without even a hint at setting out what its best use may be. What a miserable state we find ourselves in, that the council cannot even say they'd welcome plans for affordable housing, or indeed any other use that the community may benefit from, prior to marketing the site. The reason for this lack of vision was explained to me by the Lib Dem leader of the council as a result of a fear of procurement challenge. Of course, the council could allocate the site for council housing and develop a mixed-use scheme, including perhaps a shop and medical facilities, without the cost of agents' fees. But that sort of vision appears beyond reach for the current administration, who prefer to market the site use less. And that's from Peter Marsh, who's chairman of Winchester Labour Party, Cannon Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Robert Carter. The title of it is Council Planning Objections. Sir, on February the 6th, you published an article under the headline Council Approves Plans for New House on Winchester Up Market Street. This report concerned a planning application to WCC to build a four-storey house in our next-door neighbour's back garden. Many local residents objected to the scheme on the grounds, among other things, that it is completely out of proportion to the size of the site and would have a negative impact on our community in terms of loss of privacy. Because of the very large numbers of objectors, the case was heard by the planning committee. It was the first time most of us, there were 20 local residents present, had attended such proceedings, and it was an eye-opener. Most of the committee members seemed bored. They had all clearly seen it all before. And of the rest, the two or three that bothered to speak were concerned with minor details, whilst the main points went undiscussed. Although we were allowed time-limited presentations by ourselves and our local ward councillor, we residents were excluded from the debate, such as it was. We had thought that our concerns would be listened to, especially as no one, not the developer, the owners of the site, or significantly the planning officers, had had the courtesy to consult us prior to the application being lodged with the council. In the end, the committee, having ignored many of our well-argued objections, voted to approve the scheme, leaving us to live with the consequences of their decision. This massive, inappropriate, ugly house will now be built whether we like it or not. The idea that the committee members, elected by us, and the planning officers, whose salaries we pay through the council tax, are there to protect us from the whims of greedy developers, is clearly a joke. Were the scheme to have been refused, the developer would have had the right to appeal. No such right exists for those who oppose such a scheme, which surely is undemocratic. This is the reality of local planning in our city today, writes Robert Carter, St Cross Road, Winchester.
The next letter is from Toby Stevens and concerns refugee housing. Sir, for more than a few years now, the old Cornerways residential home in Church Lane, Kingsworthy, has been left vacant by Hampshire County Council. I assume that at some stage Hampshire County Council will be demolishing the site, the home, to sell the land to the highest bidder for new housing. However, in the meantime, given the present local housing crisis, constantly referred to by Winchester City Council, and now also the Ukrainian refugee crisis, why can't this large accommodation building with its large commercial kitchen be used to house homeless people and refugees, while Hampshire County Council takes its own time to decide what it wants to do with the site? So that letter was from Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And this letter from John Seeger Green is entitled Bookstall Information. Sir, given the financially troublesome times in which we live, one would expect that any charitable organisation would do what it could, within reason, to assist any aspect of its successful fundraising elements. But not Winchester Cathedral. Having worked for some 17 years in the deanery bookstall, one has become accustomed to the nuances of cathedral management practices. The bookstall is run entirely by volunteers. It was started by Tessa Till, the wife of the then dean, then run by the late Colonel David Budd, and now run by Miranda Bennett, and has existed solely to raise funds to help the cathedral meet the costs of the bursaries awarded to the choristers at the Pilgrim School. When summertime pertains, it opens every day, and when the clocks change, as winter approaches, it opens only at weekends, from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m, sometimes longer when the weather is clement. When open, it accepts donations of books in bags and boxes that can be retained between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m, except when it's raining, as limited space dictates that the sorting of donated books takes place outside without cover. It's hard to imagine that that is either hard to comprehend or to express, but the cathedral website continues to provide alternative information, while those responsible for the website decline to make the requisite amendments or discuss improvements. Somewhat akin to the Ancient Mariner, I make a point of extolling the bookstall to all who cross my path, particularly those who have no knowledge of it, and it is frustrating to be faced with one such new customer who, upon arrival at the bookstall the other day, explained that he'd sought further information from the website, only to discover that what was displayed contradicted much of what I told him. The deanery bookstall is referred to by some as Winchester's best-kept secret, and it appears that the cathedral management is determined to see that that is actually the case, despite the substantial financial contribution the bookstall has made and continues to make to cathedral funds. It is a puzzlement. And that is from John Seager Green at the Hospital of St. Cross, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and now we move on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, which will be followed by a letter from Westminster and then a first-person contribution.
And first then, the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle, entitled Winchester People Respond to Crisis. The Times newspaper has reported this week that people in Winchester, along with Cornwall, Leeds, Wiltshire and Dorset, have been the most generous in offering space in their homes to Ukrainian refugees. The exact numbers are unclear, as no one seems to have an overall national view, whether it is scores or hundreds, but local people have responded. Clearly, people are more likely to be better off in this area and have extra domestic space than many people living in an inner city. It is not just a spare bedroom that Winchester people are offering, but also help with things like transport and language lessons, as we report on our news pages. Cynics may sneer, but this reaction shows the depths of generosity and public spirit that we have in this district. People 1,000 miles away are in urgent need of help because of the Russian invasion, and people in Winchester are in a position to give it. So they do, in large numbers. It is something of which we should be proud. Clearly the people are several steps ahead of the government, which has appeared to be tardy and slow-footed in its response.
Letter from Westminster is by Steve Brine. Hard as it is to believe, Russia's war against Ukraine is only a month old. In 28 dark days, the world has come together to decry Putin's unprovoked aggression. Britain has passed unprecedented sanctions. A severe package with now over 1,000 individuals and entities sanctioned continued to deal a severe blow to the Russian economy, hobbling its military-industrial complex and personally damaging Putin and his inner circle. We are massively increasing tariffs on £900 million worth of Russian goods, including vodka, starving Putin's regime of funds. Our allies have done similar as we move fast to turn up the heat on our coordinated non-lethal response. While it is the case Britain and NATO are not directly engaging Russian forces, I find it very strange when some people say they're disappointed in the UK response. This year I'm taking part in the Armed Forces Parliamentary Scheme, which gives me first-hand exposure to the work of the British Army. Not long before the outbreak of war, we were at the Specialist Weapons School near Warminster, seeing the very anti-tank technology we gave to the Ukrainians and trained their forces to use. By all reports, they have been hugely effective, and we should really be proud of the role our country has played in bolstering the Ukrainian defence. Every country is playing its part and playing to its strengths, and the British Army is a true friend to Ukraine right now. The other area, of course, is humanitarian, and after a frustratingly slow start, which I was very vocal about, we're now in a good place. The Ukraine Family Scheme is working well and picking up pace. Because of pressure from many of us on the backbenches, we are streamlining so that Ukrainians with passports can get permission to come here online and undertake biometric checks once they arrive, speeding up the process. We have issued 10,200 visas in over 2 weeks to reunite Ukrainians with family in the UK. The accompanying Homes for Ukraine Community Sponsorship Scheme, which is based on something in Canada, promises to show again what a big and generous heart our country has. This uncapped scheme allows sponsors in the UK, who will receive £350 a month as a thank you, to register their interest in providing homes or spare rooms for a minimum stay of 6 months to nominated Ukrainian families or individuals. Well over 100,000 sponsors have signed up so far, with our area in the top five areas across the country to do so. When I was in Twyford last weekend attending their fundraiser for Ukraine, people told me they were anxious to move to the next stage, so I met with the new Minister for Refugees on Monday and posted online what I hope is a useful video chat with Lord Harrington. We cover what happens next and how you can match up with a family wanting to come here. RESET is one organisation government is working with, and you can find them at www.homesforukraine.org.uk. Finally, something completely different. I have been our MP for 12 years. In that time, I have totally rejected negative campaigning and never produced such material which I believe demeans us. And ultimately, I trust my constituents to know what's right and see when they're being played. That will, no matter what is being delivered into Winchester from outside our area, continue to be how I conduct myself as our local Member of Parliament.
And this is an article by Joanna Lewis entitled The Sacrifice of Ukraine. Apart from shopping lists and student references, I find it hard to write anything other than on this war at the moment. The brutality of Russian forces stalk my nightmares. The plight of its people makes me cry. I go to bed dreading what the night will bring down on this beautiful country, the world even. When I wake, the first thing that comes to my mind is how much of Ukraine is still there. I won't forget the face of a Ukrainian girl I saw at a Friday night rally in Trafalgar Square, on her father's shoulders, flowers in her hair. No child that young should look so sad. It's been a steep learning curve. We know in more detail just how baseless were the motivations for this invasion. There was never any agreement made with Russia post-end of Cold War that NATO would not expand. NATO has been a defensive alliance. Its members mostly spend very little on militarization. By aggressively pursuing war, the Russian leadership faced mass prosecutions in the International Criminal Court. We've seen the shocking depth and scale of Russian human rights violations, reminding us how the regime rules at home. The atrocities against civilians are horrific. This is 21st century genocide. Young men have been removed. No matter age or gender, a horrible wholesale slaughter of the innocent is unfolding. People who were going about their business a month ago, like you and I, are being tortured and butchered to death. Provincial cities, their rich historic architecture, built up over centuries, are deemed no longer to exist. Looting and raping are commonplace. Sexual violence against civilians is a war crime. The Russian dogs of war will also face mass criminal prosecution. We've learned that Putin is threatening chemical and nuclear attack against a people and a land he says are Russian. His lunacy is confirmed, as is his total disregard for a potential global human and environmental catastrophe. Ukraine is a massive food producer, hence its fertilizer plants, now being called laughably chemical weapon sites. Africa relies heavily on food imports from this region. We've seen the way Russian propaganda has lost that war. The home front has gone digital and emphatic. Ukrainian footballers, boxers, models, heavy rock bands, Russian ballet dancers and celebrities, from Arnie Schwarzenegger to Sir David Beckham, are even reaching Russian audiences. But the Kremlin is banking on compassion fatigue setting in, and that our media will move on to the next story. This must not happen. We too can push back, supporting the wonderful local fundraising for refugees, being active on social media, sharing real news stories, and calling out Russian trolls. We can lobby Parliament, press governments and international organizations to take the same no-compromise stances as with Hitler and the Nazis post-World War II. We can signal to that other geriatric authoritarian regime that if China supports Putin, we will not buy its products. Russia has been unmasked irrevocably. We now know so much about the depth of official corruption. The boatloads of money sent by the IMF for Soviet rebuilding in the early 1990s simply vanished. One of Putin's homes is valued at $1 billion. How for years Russian oligarchs have manipulated Britain's legal system, bullying journalists and writers to prevent exposure. Catherine Belton survived. Her excellent 2020 book, Putin's People, is flying off the shelves. This regime and its ideology will never be taken seriously as being for the people. Its elites hate the people. They are held down by poverty and fear. If you hold up a blank piece of paper in the street today, expect 15 years in jail. Most of all, we've learnt about everyday heroism. The Ukrainian people and Zelensky, who stands firm, even resist to the death. Their ultimate sacrifice says that what life is to them without freedom, democracy and accountability under Russian rule is not worth having.
There are no special announcements this week. British summertime ends this weekend, the clocks going forward by 1 hour early on Sunday morning. So on Sunday, sunrise will be at 6:50 a.m. in the morning, that's just before 7 o'clock, and sunset will be at 7:30 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact the telephone number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And this first one we like here in the studio, and I'm sure you will. Hampshire Toad Patrol. Hampshire councillors were out and about on a dark evening recently to ensure the safety of amphibians crossing the roads. The Newton Valence Toad Patrol saw councillors being taught how to save toads from getting squashed on the road. Toad Patrol Manager Sue Binder helped County Councillor Mark Kemp-Gee and East Hampshire District Councillor Diana Tennyson with the correct procedure.
Plans for former medical centre site. Winchester City Council has submitted a planning application to demolish a derelict medical centre building as part of its redevelopment of the Silver Hill area. The council want to demolish the Friargate Medical Centre and redevelop the site as a temporary area of public open space. The medical centre has been empty since 2014. Its demolition will mark the start of the redevelopment of Central Winchester Regeneration CWR area. The plans for the former medical centre site have been informed by public engagement exercise that took place in December last year. International design practice Ove Arup and Partners are looking to incorporate a range of new public facilities. This includes installing a new timber decking bridge at the point where Friars Gate crosses the Itchen watercourse, erecting a light timber fence along the southeast corner of the site to ensure close to ensure that the privacy of neighbouring residents is respected, incorporating a large number of new trees as well as wildflower and ornamental grass planting, introducing self-seating, including picnic benches, to encourage people to make use of the newly created spaces, installing 10 new bike stands to encourage alternative methods of transport into the city from the private car, and incorporating a lighting strategy to ensure public safety during evenings night time. A statement from the City Council said the resulting open space will temporarily transform the rundown site in the city centre, inviting people to enjoy the space and making a positive contribution to the character and appearance of the area. It will also enhance the overall pedestrian experience by providing 3 new north-south access routes to Winchester Bus Station and the city centre. The council will also move ahead with procuring a development partner to deliver the shared vision for the centre of the city that has been developed from extensive consultation. The wider proposals will result in a vibrant new quarter for people living and working in and around the district, including flexible workspace, retail and leisure activities, high quality homes, and an attractive public realm.
Smell still affecting houses. The mystery pong of sewage is still affecting households on King's Barton, the forum heard. The smell has been bothering residents of the new estate for over a year, the meeting was told. Councillor Caroline Horrell, Conservative group leader, said at the online meeting last Tuesday, "The sewage problem, I'm concerned we haven't resolved that, and no one seems to understand why." Ian Curry, Carla Technician Director, said work had been done to track down the source of the smell. Mr. Curry said the smell is intermittent. It's not a constant. We have used CCTV on all the sewers, so we know they are clean and running. There is no debris down there. We are liaising with Southern Water. They've been helpful, and we're going to approach them again to see if they can help. If the sewers are running clean, there is no reason they can smell. The intermittent waft is for 10 seconds, and it disperses. We are struggling to understand what that can be. He said that had the problem been constant, then it would be a pumping station problem. Mr. Curry said that as more houses are built, the problem should disappear. Residents have been asked to keep diaries of the smell so Carla can understand the problem better. The forum was told that residents had been asked to keep diaries, but they were unaware of any being kept. Forum chairman, Councillor Anne Weir, who lives in nearby Stony Lane Week, said she can occasionally smell it too. The issue was first reported in the Hampshire Chronicle last year, and more recently on the Chronicle website, before being picked up by the Sun's website.
Takeaway owner jailed for attack. The owner of a Winchester Chinese takeaway has been jailed for launching a bloody double meat cleaver attack on his wife's lover after catching the pair in bed. Long Fei Zeng, who owns the Oriental Star in Andover Road, along with his estranged wife, Xiu Ling Ling, was sentenced to 5 years and 3 months behind bars after being found guilty of wounding and with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. The court heard how Zeng, 50, had become depressed after his marriage had started to fail in the summer of last year, refusing to accept his wife's requests for a divorce, which they argued about on many occasions. During that time, Mrs. Ling Ling had grown close to Xing Lin Nen, a chef who worked at the restaurant, who she later referred to as her boyfriend when questioned by police. The judge heard from the prosecution that on September the 8th, 2021, Zeng had travelled to Southampton in a state of depression, where he was found drunk and agitated on the roof of IKEA car park by security staff. They took him to hospital and called his wife, who reportedly waved away their concerns, saying he had threatened to kill himself on a daily basis. She then spent the night at the flat above the takeaway where Mr. Lin Nen lived. The next morning, on September the 9th, Zeng arrived at the shop and entered using his keys before arming himself with two meat cleavers from the restaurant's kitchen. In an initial statement given to police, Mrs. Ling Ling described waking up to find someone had come in shouting, continually striking out at Mr. Lin Nen, who suffered 7 grave wounds to the body during the ordeal. She managed to force Zeng off Mr. Lin Nen before pushing him out the door, when he reportedly remarked, "How can you treat me like this after 19 years of marriage when I'm contemplating suicide?" He dropped one of the cleavers while leaving the flat, which was later found by police. Mrs. Leng then made a distressing 999 call to the police, in which she said, "Help, my boyfriend has been chopped by my husband." Sentencing at Winchester Crown Court on Wednesday, March the 16th, the judge, Recorder Louise Harvey, said, "The attack was extreme, and you gave no consideration to the wounds you were causing. Very simply, you were using an incredibly dangerous weapon. The assault was persistent, and the harm caused was grave and very serious."
Pub set for relaunch following major refurbishment. A Coldham Common pub is set to reopen its doors after a large-scale refurbishment. The Fisher's Pond in Main Road has been shut for over a month while work took place. Staff are now readying themselves for the big relaunch, with the pub due to officially open to guests from Friday, March the 25th. Changes include a private dining area, a new garden and fresh interiors. Along with a new look, the relaunched Fisher's Pond has also introduced an all-new food offering. In addition to lunch and dinner, the pub will now offer a brunch menu, which boasts a selection of popular dishes from 9 a.m. until midday, Monday to Saturdays, and 11:30 a.m. on Sundays. Ben Stothart, General Manager, said, "We're working hard to create a truly unique and stimulating experience for our guests, and are so excited to unveil the new Fisher's Pond to the local area. Both myself and the whole team are incredibly excited to open the doors and welcome guests."
Ash Dybeck leads to tree felling operation on the A31. Dozens of trees near Alsford have been felled because of Ash Dybeck disease. In a social media post, Hampshire County Council said, "Our Hampshire Highways arboricultural teams will be carrying out essential tree safety works along the A31 Alsford Road between Ladycroft near Alsford and the Percy Hobbs roundabout at Morne Hill. Most of the work will be at the Ladycroft roundabout end in the central reservation. The work is necessary because a large number of the trees have sadly been infected by Ash Dybeck disease. The works are expected to last up to 2 weeks, and the dual carriageway will be reduced to one lane in places to allow work to take place safely, but crossovers will remain open. We're sorry for any inconvenience that this may cause, and thank you for your understanding. The works were due to have finished last weekend. Ash Dybeck has now infected trees across Hampshire. It is predicted to severely affect or kill over 90% of ash trees, and was first confirmed in the county in 2014.
Music festival gets license. An Alsford music festival will go ahead this year after an agreement was reached to grant a license at the 11th hour. Brockwood Festival reached an agreement with Hampshire Constabulary and Winchester City Council's Environmental Protection Team after concerns were raised about security and noise pollution. An agreement was made between the three parties on March the 21st, a day before the council's licensing subcommittee was due to meet. Brockwood Entertainments applied to put on a one-day festival for 800 people at Brockwood Parklands near Hinton Ampner on July the 8th. Police had concerns about security, and the City Council Environment Health Team was worried about noise pollution, with music proposed to go on till 4:30 a.m. and alcohol sales to 3 a.m. A slightly smaller inaugural event was held in July 2021. Police had said that 6 security officers would be insufficient for the 800 festival goers and estimated 200 workers. A spokesman from the City Council said, "I can confirm that this means that the premises licence will be granted, subject to the licence conditions agreed between the applicant, Hampshire Constabulary, and the Council's Environmental Protection Team."
Plans for Heart of Housing Estate. The developer of Kings Barton is soon to unveil its plans for the heart of the new community. Carla Holmes will reveal its plans in the summer for a food store, pub, community centre, children's nursery and extra care apartments. Viv Hill, regional head of design, said, "We want to create a sense of place, get the landscaping right and create a community. The focus is to create a special place at Kings Barton." Carla is also shortly to apply for detailed permission for 195 homes. Councillor Jane Rutter, whose ward includes nearby Headbourne Worthy, expressed concern that plans had been drawn up for a new community centre without any input from Headbourne Worthy Parish Council, which may in future have to run the building. She said, "Headbourne Worthy Parish Council is concerned that sometime in the future it will be responsible for managing, when at no stage has it been involved in introducing them." Would it not be sensible to involve the Parish Council and Kings Barton Residents Association at an early stage on what is provided in the community building, whether a big hall, meeting rooms, what are the facilities, so we know what is presented is something functional and we will not have to budget £200,000 to turn it into something that should have been built in the first place. Mr. Hill said that the centre would include a large room, reception offices, health rooms and a kitchen. He said the approved planning document would be shared with the councils and association. At this stage, it is unclear who would run a community centre, but it could be the parish council, charity or a commercial organisation.
Councillor speaks after storming out. A city councillor has criticised the Liberal Democrats after he himself was criticised in a meeting. Councillor Michael Kern had been speaking about an alleged lack of consultation by the Lib Dems in Alresford over plans for a new 42-space car park in the Dean. Senior Lib Dem Martin Todd said Councillor Kern's comments were inaccurate. With that, Councillor Kern stormed out of the meeting, sparking Tory group leader Councillor Caroline Horrell to say that Councillor Todd had no right to speak to him like that. After the meeting, Councillor Kern said, "Since joining the council, I've been concerned with the tone in which some of the councillors' response to comments from the public and other councillors who are expressing the views of residents we are elected to represent. The Code of Conduct states that councillors should listen to the interests of all parties and we should champion the needs of all residents. The whole community, including those who did not vote for them, and putting the interests of the residents first. Sadly, not for the first time, I've been spoken to in a condescending manner and demeaning tone, which is not adhering to that code. I was representing the views of concerned residents, so does Councillor Todd also wish to tell the electorate they are wrong?"
Plan for first fast food drive-through. Gosh, that bit of alliteration took me by surprise there. I'll say it again. Plan for first fast food drive-through.
Well done.
Winchester's first drive-through McDonald's could be coming soon and create dozens of jobs under plans submitted to the City Council. Currently, Winchester only has one McDonald's in St George's Street, but now one could be built on the Tesco car park in Eastern Lane. The restaurant is expected to create more than 65 jobs. It will be the first fast food drive-through, as the only other drive-through is Costa, also on Eastern Lane. The site would include a play area outside the restaurant and a 33-space car park. On the planning statement, it said, "The site forms part of the existing wider commercial Tesco car park to the east of Winchester. The restaurant shall maintain a strict protocol for ensuring noise and disturbance is kept to a minimum. All shift managers shall receive conflict resolution training sufficient to ensure they can deal effectively with noise or antisocial behaviour." The planning statement explains how the new restaurant will help the local community through McDonald's Charitable Foundation. It said, "Local McDonald's franchisee, Tony Bennett, helped to provide 120 hours of free, safe, fun football sessions for local children from Winchester and across Hampshire throughout the summer. This is part of McDonald's long-term commitment to help grow grassroots football in our local communities. Tony Bennett and 36 crew members from 9 of his restaurants, including Winchester, recently joined forces to tackle littering across Hampshire and Dorset. This included taking to local parks to help spruce them up for the summer holidays. This formed one of 20 large-scale events organised by Tony over the past 5 years, collecting over 400 bags of rubbish.
Marwell Zoo welcomes dinosaur exhibition. Marwell Zoo has unveiled the latest new species to join its wildlife park, a collection of towering dinosaurs made using more than 2 million toy bricks. Over 9,000 hours were spent building 55 prehistoric creatures which have started to arrive at the zoo before the Brickosaurs evolution launch next month. Professional builders from BrickLive International crafted a 7-metre-long Spinosaurus, a nodding Heterodontosaurus, and a huge Mosasaur emerging from the water, among many more. Sean Manny, Marwell Zoo's commercial director, said, "It's wonderful to see the Brickosaurs begin to arrive and the finishing touches take shape. Everyone who has been involved in bringing Brickosaurs evolution to life has truly gone above and beyond into creating this spectacular event, and we're counting down the weeks until we can showcase them to our guests. It will be a chance to step back in time and come face to face with more than 20 species on an immersive and educational adventure through our beautiful 140-acre park." To build a Brickosaur, a creative meeting takes place to decide on the species and the exact pose to ensure the design will pass health and safety checks. Designers then create a 3D digital model. Teams of between 2 and 7 then begin to build each structure around stainless steel frames to ensure structural integrity and safety, gluing together one brick at a time. Brickosaurus evolution is on display from April the 1st until September the 4th, 2020. That's April the 1st until September the 4th, 2022.
Book launch of New History of Alsford. A New History of Alsford has just been published by the local Historical and Literary Society. It was launched at a meeting of the Society in St John's Church on Wednesday evening, March the 16th, when the editor, Professor Brian Tippett, spoke about taking a fresh look at Alsford's history, after which many of the 90 members and guests present brought their first copies and had them signed. Alsford Through Time, A New History, takes the reader from the town's foundation. It describes key events with fresh insights, including the creation of the Great Pond, the Battle of Cheriton, the devastating fire of 1689, the billeting of hundreds of French prisoners in Alsford during the Napoleonic Wars, the agricultural riots of 1830, the coming of the railway, how Alsford fared in 2 world wars, the development of the watercress line, and the town's growing tourist appeal. Full sales details are given on www.alswardhistandlit.co.uk, and there's a lovely photograph in St John's Church of a very crowded congregation waiting for the book to be signed.
Pigeons still invading Winchester city centre. Stubborn pigeons, which have plagued an historic monument, remain a problem throughout the city despite efforts to remove them. A recent meeting heard how they are being encouraged to flock to the city centre by members of the public feeding them. As reported, the pigeons have been colonising Hyde Gate, the historical gateway to Hyde Abbey, the last known resting place of Alfred the Great. Now they have also spread to Hammond's Passage and parts of the square. Former City Councillor Ian Tate addressed the Winchester Town Forum, highlighting his concerns. Mr. Tate said, "The issue at Hyde Gate is to do with the number of pigeons. The refurbishment at 43 the High Street is brilliant. Nearly every surface is covered with anti-pigeon prongs. This is the same in the square. And sadly, when I walked there recently, a lady was feeding the pigeons with pieces of bread, which may explain the problem. Feeding pigeons is a problem right across the city centre. It is littering, and it could be fined if there was a will to do so. Hammond's Passage is disgusting. It is just one continuous trail of pigeon excrement. It's repulsive. Councillor John Tippett Cooper, who leads the City Council's informal group on heritage, said, "The pigeons are an absolute nightmare. The pigeon proofing is being installed now. However, there has been some difficulties with some very stubborn pigeons. The chamber of Hyde Gate is now protected. The main gate archway is the problem. Along the two ledges of stone, the pigeons were still settling. A recent attempt to fix this was to pull out the grating on the entrances, but they have come back. The attempt to fix this will come in the next week or so." Councillor Tippett Cooper gave an update on the restoration works of Hyde Gate. He said, "For Hyde Gate, the pigeon proofing is phase one. Phase two is some restoration and structural works on the gate itself. We're appointing a specialist stonework contractor. Phase three is a public realm improvement. It will look at Hyde Gate, how it can be restored to a high standard, which is a vision we all share." Edward Fennell, founder of Hyde 900 and a campaigner for better present the gateway, has been pressing the City Council to make improvements.
Extra funding approved for new sports pavilion. Winchester Town Forum has agreed to provide additional funding for the project for a new sports pavilion. Council has agreed to allocate an additional £250,000 from the Neighbourhood Community Infrastructure Levy, CIL, for the new pavilion at the King George V playing field. Cabinet recently agreed to spend £2.2 million on the project, which will create a hub of sport and community facilities aimed at youth football, especially women and girls. The scheme includes a club room that can be used independently for community and social events. Councillor Kelsey Lerner explained that a user group will be set up to help manage the facility for the local community. She said, "Support given by Football Foundation has been shown with their funding. As well as football, it will be a home for women's and disability cricket. The club room will be available for clubs and community groups. The City Council is putting together an advisory group to work with us to manage the pavilion, which will have councillor and community representation." Councillor John Tippett Cooper asked if the facility would get as much use during the week as it would at weekends. Council officer Susan Robbins said, "This is why we will have a user group, so that we can expand the provision for when it's not as busy. We're very much about working with organisations to make sure that provision is provided." Councillor Lerney added, "There is currently a shortage of junior football training during evenings. I anticipate it will be more desirable destination for clubs when we have suitable facilities attached to the pitches." Councillor Anne Weir was pleased with the project. She said, "I'm pleased this is moving forward. It has been a real labour of love on many parts. It is vitally important we get this off the ground. It will complete the sport and leisure park programme and be a real asset to that part of town." Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "Women and girls football needs funding as it's a fast-growing sport. Building costs are going up, so we have to be pragmatic with this project. Hopefully it will make Winchester a capital for women and girls football."
MP counters plans to axe constituency. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond is set to submit an alternative plan to the Boundary Commission in a bid to save her constituency from being disbanded. Only established in 2010, the rural constituency held by Conservative MP would again become part of the constituencies of Winchester, Fareham and East Hampshire if the current proposed changes are passed through. Winchester would get back a chunk of the Meon Valley, including Cheriton, Kilmaston, Bishop's Waltham and Hambledon, but lose Chandler's Ford, which would return to East Lee. Miss Drummond has said she's disappointed by the proposals but supports the overall strategy and has now teamed up with Fareham and Eastleigh to formulate an alternative plan which will be submitted to the Boundary Commission for England, BCE, on Friday. She said, "I'm disappointed about the proposals to disband Meon Valley. It has been a base for me for 36 years. I have family living there, and I was married there too. However, I do support the overall strategy of having fairer constituency sizes. Along with Fareham and Eastleigh, we are putting forward an alternative on Friday that will essentially move wards around in the three constituencies so we can keep them largely as they are. We feel this is a good alternative because all three constituencies work really well, and we feel this is the best way for people to be represented in the future. Boundaries for constituencies are revised every 5 years with the aim of keeping them all the same size. The Commission says it is required to ensure that the number of electors in each constituency is more equal. In doing so, the number of constituencies in England will increase from 533 to 543. Steve Bryan MP said, "Parliamentary boundary changes bring disruption for almost everyone involved and always demand give and take, but they're part of the job. The local Conservatives and the party nationally support the proposals put forward by the Boundary Commission for England, which are logical given the legislatively framework that we've set them based on the manifesto we stood for."
Chamber Music Festival returning to City. Tickets are on sale for a music festival in Winchester. Winchester Chamber Music Festival is taking place from April the 28th to May the 1st with a full quota of international performers. The lineup features London Bridge Trio with guests, the Castalian Quartet, Olivier Stankovic oboe, Charlotte Bonneton violin and viola, Usha Kapoor violin, Isabel Adams viola, Daniel Simayoki cello, Edward Leung piano, Lenny Sayers clarinet, and Winchester Camerata. The festival will be resident throughout the weekend at St Paul's Church, and the artists will return to the Theatre Royal Winchester for the Saturday evening gala concert, where they will be joined by Winchester Camerata, enabling some larger scale performances. The weekend programme offers a wide range of repertoire, ranging from Mozart, Schumann and Brahms through 20th century British greats, Benjamin Britten and Frank Bridge, to hand-picked contemporary works with a talk, open rehearsal and masterclasses. Artistic director Kate Gould has tailored the weekend programme according to the artists who have been invited. A feature of the chamber repertoire for oboe with LSO's principal oboist, Olivier Stankovic, making his Winchester debut, and an evening by Sini Simonen on her Hardanger fiddle, where the musicians will be exploring works of Sibelius and his folk influences. Bookings for all events can be made in person and by phone at the Theatre Royal box office, the number for which is 01962 840 01962 440. I'll read that a second time. 01962 840 440.
A Winchester brother says he's been blown away by the public's generosity after floods of people donated to help him get his car back on the road. An appeal was put out on behalf of Brother John Leiths of St Cross late last month after he was targeted by thieves who stole his catalytic converter during a late night raid on the hospital's car park. The crooks struck under the cover of Storm Eunice and used a saw to prise the device from the car, a Honda Jazz, on the night of Friday, February the 18th. A second Honda Jazz belonging to another brother was also targeted by the villains during what seemed to be a coordinated attack. This wasn't the first time Brother John had been hit by thieves either. Just last year, crooks forced open the door of his old Berlingo van before dumping it a few streets away. The damage was so extensive, it was written off by the insurance company. He's also had two tricycles stolen from the hospital, while his fellow brothers have similarly been blighted by opportunist thieves during their tenure. After reporting the most recent theft to his insurance company, the 80-year-old, who is one of 16 brothers living at the medieval Winchester Almshouse, was told that it was likely the car would be written off.
New County Police Chiefs. Hampshire Constabulary has appointed two new Assistant Chief Constables. ACC Catherine Akehurst will oversee the Force's Joint Operations Unit, which includes road policing and contact management across Hampshire, Isle of Wight and Thames Valley. Also starting in the role is ACC Robert France, who will be responsible for crime, criminal justice, intelligence, and tasking and development. ACC Akehurst started her policing career with Greater Manchester Police in 2003, before transferring to Hertfordshire in 2006. During her career, she has worked in a number of uniformed and detective roles, with her most recent position being the Director of Business Change for the Bedfordshire, Cambridge and Hertfordshire Strategic Alliance. She has also previously spent 2 years seconded to Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services, working as force liaison to Norfolk and Suffolk constabularies. ACC France is transferring to the force from Thames Valley Police, where he has worked throughout his career. Like ACC Akehurst, he has spent time in uniformed and detective roles and has extensive background in public order policing and firearms command. His time with TVP included a 5-year stint as area commander for Bracknell and Wokingham, and he has most recently led on force performance, business planning, change and organisational development as head of governance and service improvements.
And finally, an update on Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine. Winnie the Peregrine laid her first egg of 2022 on March the 15th. However, on March the 19th, she'd eaten it. But on the morning of March the 20th, that's the next day, she laid her second egg of the year. At around 11:30 a.m, Winnie laid the latest egg and proceeded to sit on it to keep it warm and protected. Keith Betton, chairman of Hampshire Ornithological Society, said in a Facebook post on March the 19th, "After a sad start to the day with Winnie eating her first egg of 2022, I thought I'd focus on the future. I'm sure she won't give up. She's bound to lay more eggs in the weeks ahead, and she hasn't wasted all that useful calcium. She has recycled it. Winnie, who had at least 25 chicks with her late mate Chester, returned to the ledge of the cathedral at the start of February. However, for the first time in years, Winnie, who hatched another 3 peregrine chicks in 2021, was flying solo after her mate Chester died in May last year. However, Winnie the peregrine found a new male in mid-February who has been named William by the cathedral team. That concludes our extracts from the week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.